We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Top. What was the name of that song?
As you gathered, the name of the song is Gucci Ragtop by Kid Sister featuring Gucci Mane.
And what label is it on?
It's on Fool's Gold Records. Fool's Gold Records tapes and vinyl.
Vinyl. We are Finger on the Pulse.
Hello.
Hello. We are also host Snacky Tunes.
Indeed.
And we are on our second week of 5 weeks of bringing in different Brooklyn labels to talk about what it's like to be a Brooklyn label, or as we talked about before, a small growing empire, which I think we can dub you guys Fool's Gold that by now.
Yeah, I'm not gonna dissuade you.
No, as you shouldn't. This is about, we do praise heaping on this show. It's all softballs all the time.
Yeah, underhand. So actually, I would say it's like t-balls.
Yeah, we just set it up.
Wooden bats and tennis balls.
So we got Nick from Fool's Gold.
Hello,
in
hello.
Studio. He's gonna drop some knowledge and a set on us later on in the show, but as first, we always like to wet the palate with our food guest.
And not only that, you can What a Knife on a Cutting Stone. And with that transition, Joel Buckowitz, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks.
Cut Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Homemaker of knives and all things sharp, if you will.
Pretty much knives, yeah.
So, you know, as we were talking earlier before, the world of chefdom and food people is small, and what's even smaller are the people who actually make culinary tools and knives and things like that. And you're part of what, the half dozen of guys in America?
Yeah, well, guys that really focus on kitchen knives, yeah, there's maybe 4 or 5 of us, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there a different type of, oh, I guess just like switchblades and things along those lines?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, butterfly knives. Yeah,
right. Balsons, yeah.
It's either butcher knives or butterfly knives. Those are two categories in
yeah,
America.
Yeah, my knife skills for that. So you want to flip it out with your wrist and then start cutting along the bone. So you started making knives about 8 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. But that's not, you know, well, let's talk about your history. So you got an MFA at the New School for writing.
Right.
So how did you go from writing to making knives?
Well, my wife and I, who was my girlfriend then, moved after school. We wanted to sort of get off the coast a little bit. My parents had retired to the old family farm down in Georgia. So we moved about 20 miles down the road for them. And we just lived in this teeny little southern town down there for like 3 years. During my time down there, I finished this manuscript of a novel that I was working on. And I tried to sell it. I tried to find an agent for it and couldn't. And then I started another one. I got a couple hundred pages into another one. And they just sort of lost steam, man. Yeah, I'd been working so long and hard on those projects. And it was right around the time of the Bush-Kerry election. A little before that. Well, it was sort of...
03, 04 ramping up.
Yeah. So, you know, that didn't go well. And I just was checked out, kind of.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I needed to. So I did. I said I would, you know, not. I put my computer away and said I wouldn't touch it for 3 months. And during that time, I found that I had a need to still kind of make stuff every day. I didn't really realize it, but writing like I was really sort of building a little something every day, whether it was like a sentence or, you know, a scene or a character, these kinds of things. So I had this kind of itch to do stuff. So I started doing little things like making small pieces of furniture. I made my old man a set of canoe paddles. I was making jewelry and stuff like this. And I was doing a lot of outdoorsy kind of stuff, fishing, hunting, stuff like that. And so it just seemed like, if I was ever going to try to make a knife, it seemed like the right place to do it and time. So I just gave it a shot, and it resonated with me in a real sort of weird and perfect way. It just kind of rang right.
Do you still have that first knife?
Yeah, packed away somewhere,
right.
Probably. Yeah, I haven't looked at it in a long time.
So let's flash forward from the farm to opening the store. And, you know, what was that process, or how did you be like, this is the path?
Well, I just, I got hooked pretty quick, and after, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, sold my first knife and then had this idea that maybe I could sort of scratch out a living at it. I loved it, so I just sort of wanted to try to find a way. So I did, and I got on a wait list pretty quickly, so it became a matter of, making them sort of more quickly if I could.
Right.
So that was sort of the path. And then coming back to Brooklyn, I was making like hunting type knives down there. So, I had to kind of refocus or think of, you know, like take stock. I don't think I could have sold any of those knives up here, even if I wanted to. It wasn't really my world anyway. I felt like I really felt kind of like an imposter in that world, like a little bit of an outsider.
Fair enough.
So coming back to Brooklyn, I decided I'd try to make kitchen knives. There's this idea in the knife making world that it's really easy to make a kitchen knife, that there's not much to it. So I thought, this will be just a piece of cake. I'll make kitchen knives.
And how did that work out?
Yeah, not that well. It took me like a good year and a half to get my first like prototype so that I felt comfortable giving it to somebody and saying, you know, use that for the rest of your life.
What is, I guess, not having made knives, you know, are there a handful of things that like you look for immediately and a good knife, or that chefs are always going to ask for?
Yeah, I mean, different people want different things out of a knife, but yeah, your standard sort of chef's knife, you the first thing I would look for would be, you know, is the blade straight? That's a matter of heat treatment and the quality of the steel. Is the edge nice and clean? Is the grind clean? Is it, are the handles sort of affixed in a proper way? You know, the first thing I would do with a knife that I didn't know was sort of look at the lines and try to get an idea of what was intended and if they sort of achieved that, mm-hmm. or if like things were sort of lacking proportions, you know, fit and finish is like that sort of thing that you look for first.
And, how did you, you know, you doing hunting knives and doing cooking knives, how did you get the word, you know, the word out? It was word of mouth? Did you advertise or?
Yeah, no, I've never really had a problem with that. I mean, down in Georgia, certainly I would have, because there's lots and lots of different knife makers around the country, super talented guys out there doing like amazing stuff. But in Brooklyn, I was, you know, I'm kind of a weird bird, you know, so it didn't. I've never sort of reached out for advertising. I just, my sort of philosophy on all that's just been to focus on the work. If I always focus on the work and, you know, trying to make every knife I make the best knife I've ever made, then the rest sort of seems to fall in line.
I mean, you're filling a very specific niche. I mean, nothing like, you know, I mean, you know, totally, as you said, like Tom Moylan or guys like that, just come, one of those guys has come calling. And right there, that's worth more than any advertisement you could put in any paper.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I don't think, I'd like to think that I'll never, you know, buy advertising. Like, getting to talk with you guys is, and things like this is one of the, like, super perks for me about the work. But yeah, no, I figure if I, you know, like, I create a space where people can come check out what I do and buy my stuff, and I just really focus on the work itself, then the rest sort of just comes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the space, and we're going to talk about the classes you have coming up, and some of the knives that you make, and about
any tips you would have for young future knife makers as well.
Cool. You got it.
So this, I was surprised that Nick passed us this track, and it's coming out on the. Did it come out?
It's coming out on Beatport next week.
Next week. And interesting enough, it's just one of those tracks that we've also had in our sets for a number of years, and one of those, I guess, lost gems that never gets an official release until someone goes, are you sure it wasn't out? Was that kind of the thought process? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Fool's Gold has always been a label where I track on myself, put out songs that we actually like ourselves and want to play ourselves. And this, you know, like you're saying, like this record by Roger 72 is sort of a DJ favorite. And when we realized that it never kind of got an official release, we figured, well, why don't we be the ones to do it?
Yeah. All right, so here we go. We're going to come back. We're going to talk with Joel Buckowitz from Cut Brooklyn. And that's just Catch Dubs from Fool's Gold. This is Roger 72, Take You Higher on Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Yeah.
still a favorite. It's still so good. Still so good. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. We're your host, Finger on the Pulse. We have Cut in studio along with Nick from Fool's Gold.
It's Cut Brooklyn, right?
Cut works too. Cut Brooklyn, whatever.
We're just trying for. We always like talking about the Googability. Stuff.
Yeah, Cut Brooklyn hits a little better.
You know, it's funny though. In the music world, there is a old promotion group. I guess not that old, called Cut as well.
Mm.
So all the promotions have been like Cut. I've been pronouncing knives right. Just in case they don't get confused.
So before we get back into the knives you make and the classes you have. What do you listen to when you're making knives? Is it do you go zen and go for something peaceful, or are you like grinding it out to like sort of rock? Or
I mean, it really depends on the day. You know, if I need a little bit of energy,
I'll
listen to something a little harder. But it totally depends.
Do different knives require different types of music and concentration?
If I'm making a paring knife, I'll listen to it, quick short tracks. And,
wow.
Yeah. For no, I mean, no, it's like
that's what you get for asking a question.
No, and it's our let's make a record of it. That's the first knife pun we've ever had on the show, so thank you.
You're welcome.
So let's talk about the knives that you make and what your popular ones and what your favorite ones to do. And so you were saying your 10-inch chef's knife is across the board the most popular one.
Yeah, well, so we launched a new line of knives over the holidays, over in December. My sort of first series and the knives I've been making for years now are it's like the Prospect line. That's the sort of name of it. It's just easiest. These names are kind of corny, but it's just easiest to get these things designations. So this is a knife that I kind of tried to reinvent the wheel with a little bit. It balances a little differently than others. I use super high tech steel, like the best stainless steel I can get my hands on.
Where do you get your steel from? Where do you source it?
A company called Carpenter Technologies in Reading, Pennsylvania. I keep everything sort of in, you know, American made as much as possible. And those guys make an awesome powdered stainless steel that I've been using for a little while now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
can you explain what powdered stainless steel? What is that?
Stainless just means that it's got, I think the minimum is something like 12% chromium in it. So the idea is that it won't stain. It'll still stain, but, you know, relatively it's stainless. And then the powdered process is, you know, the process by which it's made. It just means that all steel has a grain structure a little bit like sort of wood does. In the powder process, the structure sort of homogenized. The idea is that if all the different elements in the steel are dispersed kind of evenly, you'll get an edge that holds better, and it's just a little bit strong, you know, it's stronger and sort of, you know, that stuff cost me about $25 a pound, whereas the carbon steel I'm using in this new line of knives cost me like $3 a pound, but they sort of perform equally well. The difference is that carbon steel stains and develops a patina, so if people don't like that, then stainless is the way to go.
So it's an aesthetic thing. Doesn't really affect the utility of it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because I know there are people who are, you know, absolutely just super anal about the way their knives look. And it doesn't matter if it still cuts as good as like a dirty looking knife, if they want to look like it just came out of, you know, or off the line.
Yeah, I mean, carbon steel is fantastic. The idea with carbon steel is that stainless steels have been over, you know, the last 50 years have gotten a pretty bad rap, and mostly because they've been really crappy. But the newer stainless steels, they sort of have made them in a way that they sort of, as far as the way that they function and the way that they take an edge, function more like carbon steel. So now the best stainless steels work like a carbon steel in that it takes a really crisp edge. You know, knives that you get from like IKEA or something like that, well, you go to re-edge them and you get this huge gummy burr on the edge that you'll never get off. So basically, these are knives that are never sharp and you'll never be able to resharpen.
Yep. Yeah. As most people who buy their first set of everything for their new apartment at IKEA, like, I don't understand. Right. So what's your favorite knife to make?
I guess lately I've really been enjoying that sort of, so like I said, we launched this line in December, and the new line is all carbon steel. So steel that will patina and will stain, and we're using a batch of walnut that I got my hands on for handles. And it has, these knives have really classic sort of French lines. So the look is kind of, it's just a real old school look. We do like a starter patina on the blade by way of an acid etch. So every knife is a little bit different.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah,
that's,
it is.
I mean, that's, I think that's what everyone goes for when they want these like artisan prod. They don't want that factory feel to it.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, my other pieces are super, super clean, and the lines are, you know, real precise, and these are just a little more, it looks like something you pulled out of your grandmother's drawer or something, you know?
Did you know how to cook before you started making knives?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
And do you take that knowledge and bring it to, like, when you're making a knife? You're like, I think a chef would really want a knife that feels and looks and works like this?
It's taken some time to really develop my ideas on where, on how... a chef's knife should function. There's a few different sort of schools of thought and like schools of usage too. I'd sort of categorize it as like the German and French, and I'd say the French style is a little more advanced and what more like pros kind of use. But it just kind of depends on the way that you cook and your style. So, but yeah, I feel like I've boiled it down to a couple different styles, and I try to make knives that my Prospect line sort of does both well. My Journeyman line, the carbon steel line, really is made for that sort of French style.
So if I wanted to learn how to make knives from you, mm-hmm. is there an opportunity for me to do that?
No.
No?
No. I mean, maybe. I don't know. No, probably not. I mean, I could send you, like, you know, as many links or literature that you needed. But, I mean, not really. No, you'd kind of be in the way in the shop. If you wanted to come, like, sweep up, maybe... And like, you know,
started sweeping watch. Up.
But no, I mean, I've had a bunch of different assistants, and you know, the shop really quickly just sort of gets too full. I'm sort of more than open to having folks come over and talk and check out what I've got and giving any advice that I possibly can. But not really. I mean, I'm not looking for like, you know, a whole shop full of apprentices. No.
All right. Well, let's talk about the shop. It's okay. It's in Gowanus, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you actually have opened the doors now. It's no longer just, you know, you're not just making knives there. You actually have open shop hours.
Right. Right. Well, we fell last year into this space where we have a storefront. So the space was like small manufacturing spaces, super expensive down there right now. So I couldn't find anything that would fit my needs. But the storefront sort of fell into my lap, and I was like, you know, damn, maybe we could make this work for something. So around that time, I shut down the wait list, and we decided to start hanging knives in the front. And now, yeah, we're open a couple days a week, Wednesdays from 3 to 7 and Saturdays from 12 to 5. I'm taking in sharpening now, too, because I get a lot of requests for that. So folks can come drop off sharpening work.
Is it just you in the shop, or are there other?
I have one assistant, Mariah Cole. She's came down to help me from Vermont. She's a knife maker.
And you're as offering well. Classes now too, right?
We're offering knife skills classes starting June 15th. Yeah, not knife making classes. I mean, maybe that's down the road.
I mean, look, I know. The only reason why I ask is that I saw, you know, and this directly, the trend in butchering is insane. Right. And like people who are willing to just do like apprenticeship in days of yore servitude would probably be a term. Like I'm sure if you offered up those classes, people would have.
Yeah, I mean, I could make money doing that. I feel like I want to be honest with people, like, and not, I don't want to take a bunch of people from Brooklyn that live in their little apartments and like give them, sort of pretend to give them this skill that they go home and they don't have a grinder, they don't have a space for it.
Right.
They can't really do it. If I can figure out a way to make it easy to show somebody so that they can actually make a knife in the space that they've got or their apartment or even a little studio without spending, you know, 10 grand on equipment, I would do that in a second. I want to be sort of honest about it. I don't want to give somebody, you know, make people pay a whole bunch of money for skills that they'll like just never be able to use, you know.
You know what? That is actually the right answer.
That's the right answer.
Right. We want to
hold on, but the knife skills class on the 15th?
Yeah, yeah. This is a knife like working with food kind of skills class. Yeah, on the 15th. We're at 7:00. If folks want to sort of sign up, just email us at classes@cutbrooklyn.com. We're just sort of getting the kinks out. I've got a couple guys that are going to be doing the class, but you know, we're excited about it. This is the first of what I hope will be several different types of classes over the next year or so.
That's awesome. And one last question. Have you gotten any really weird requests for knives? Like, or variations that you were able to accomplish?
I pretty much say no to that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, no, just because
time-wise.
Yeah, like a full custom knife that people that you would end up designing something with aren't designers, so these things go back and forth and back and forth on email, and if you like build for your time, these pieces would just be so expensive. And then usually, because it's just a series of compromises, the final piece is just hideous. It's just ugly. So you, right. so you're done and you've got this like, what, $3,000 knife. And if the guy doesn't want it or the girl doesn't want it, then what? You can't sell it to anybody because who the hell is going to want that? So
right. No. Like the magenta glitter handle is really not going to play well.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I've gotten some, when I was doing sort of sporting type knives, I got requests for knives that people could use for, you know, weapon retention and various crazy different things. And, right. You know, no, that's not really my thing. So no.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. What's the website?
It's cutbrooklyn.com.
And where's the store, the address?
We're at 461 3rd Ave down in Gowanus. It's between 9th and 10th Streets.
And you're actually pretty active on Twitter, so let's get that one as well.
Right on, that's just at cutbrooklyn. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it.
Thank you for being on here. All right, up next in the studio, we got a couple songs from Nick from Fool's Gold, and we're going to talk about the origins of the label and the growth of the mini empire, and then we're going to get an extended set from him. And we have so much food today.
You know, and also, I gotta say, if it sounds a little slow over here, it's because we've had one day of sunshine in a week. If you go back and listen to last week's show, and all of our shows are podcasts, just search Snacky Tunes on the iTunes store. We said how gross it was last week, it's just as gross this week.
Yeah, it's pretty
anyway, cool. Catch up, take us away, Snacky Tunes live.
I got Ray-Ban vision, these ain't no prescription. I see you haters coming in, but don't think that I'm slipping. I got Ray-Ban vision, I wear them when I'm whipping. I wear them when I'm fucking, all my women think I'm tripping. I got Ray-Ban vision, I got Ray-Ban vision. I got Ray-Ban vision, I got Ray-Ban vision. I got Ray-Ban vision, this is how I'm living. The only time I look you in the eye, if we doing business. I got Ray-Ban vision.
Hey, I got Ray-Ban vision. My bitches think they prescription. I'm looking fly as fuck, like a GQ subscription. You can't see behind them, but niggas know that I'm quitting. Cause I'm gone off top with diesel. That's as sour as a lemon. Lemon. No, nigga, no, this ain't no Gucci shit. Wear them with my Louis shit. And I got a groupie bitch who wear them with her Poochie shit. And she swear that I'm stupid rich. Cause I got all these Ray-Ban flavors. But I favor my all-black Dark Vaders. I rock them when I'm blocking haters and something tailored. Yes, I'm looking dapper if you are inquiring, but don't ask me where I get them when you pay, you acquire things. I spend high notes like a high school choir sings to have them admiring, thinking that their stylist needs firing. Damn, I ain't mean to get you fired on some fresh shit, but my collection's quite impressive. I got Ray-Ban vision,
these ain't no prescription. I see you haters coming, nigga, don't think that I'm slipping. I got Ray-Ban vision, I wear them when I'm whipping. I wear them when I'm fucking, all my women think I'm tripping. I got Ray-Ban vision, I got Ray-Ban vision, I got Ray-Ban vision, I got Ray-Ban vision, I got Ray-Ban vision. This is how I'm living, the only time I look you in the eye, if we doing business. I got Ray-Ban vision.
P-I-double-L in the building. Yeah.
Maybach music.
I got my black shades on, Ray-Ban on the side. It's in the Batcave, homes, Bruce Wayne when I ride. So those who robbing, you know I got the carbon. 15 like half or 30, leave them slobbing. No need to brag, but my black shades fresher. Harder than an all-marble dresser. Yes, sir, I am the professor, the teacher of all cool shit. Bitches like he look like somebody I went to school with. Lenses, blacked out, Benz is the crack house. And everybody keep trying to buy it like Shaq House. Okay then, I put my foot up in this outfit. Them Ray-Bans is something I gotta leave the house with.
Yeah. These ain't no prescription. I see you haters coming, nigga, don't think that I'm slipping. I got Ray-Ban vision. I wear them when I'm whipping. I wear them when I'm fucking. All my women think I'm tripping. I got Ray-Ban vision. 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 This is how I'm living. The only time I look you in the eye.
Ray-Ban vision, can you see me, mommy? Making bitches out of paper like origami. Pussy on tsunami, they slap the salami. The bitches pussy kicking like I heard a Russian Nazi. I get hand-me-down shirt from Liberace. You kiss bitches that's into Bukkake. I'm a modern day pharaoh, yeah. With bow and arrows, yeah. That shoots barrels and I drink six barrels, yeah. We heard your song one time again like Christmas Carol, yeah. I fuck bitches out of American Apparel, yeah. So they hit me the skeet and get drugged out. In your week got seats like a major league dugout, yeah. Smoke two blunts, drunk up half blue ribbon. Now she call a cab when her fucking panties missing. When she hit the door, they know it's no kissing. Never see me again, I got Ray-Ban vision.
jump the gun a little.
Yeah. So when they say big finish, is that what they refer to?
The Susan caught you with the extended outro.
She did. She caught me with a pause.
You would have been that guy that would have been like clapping in the audience just a little too soon and hope no one saw you. It's like, I'm a fan. I'm just getting excited.
Got him.
So what's the name of that song?
That song is by the Susan, who are a Japanese band that's on Fool's Gold.
And who was before that?
Before that, it was A-Trax Ray-Ban Vision Remix, which features Donis, who we've put out on Fool's Gold, Pill, who recently signed to Rick Ross's Maybach Music, but you know he's part of the extended family. He played at our block party in New York this past summer, and Danny Brown, who is a rapper from Detroit and the newest signing to Fool's Gold. We're really excited about what he has going.
You know, small fact here. A-Trax and the two of us share the same birthday.
Really?
March 30th.
That is a power trio right there.
I don't know if we're the same age, though. I don't think so. But we will say that he is from Montreal, and so are we. Our family's from Montreal.
Okay.
Yeah, so go back. But let's take it back. Let's go back to when you were at Fader. Rewind it. And you left.
Yes.
And I remember seeing you right when you were leaving at some event. You're like, I'm going to start a label. And I was like, oh, okay. Sounds nice. Let's go from there.
Yeah.
How did this come about?
Well, I mean, I never sort of set out to be like writer dude or editor dude. I was always, you know, doing a couple different things at once, whether it was DJing or making music or doing graphic design or what have you. And I kind of, you know, got the job at Fader because they wanted a sort of editorial voice that wasn't like, I went to college and now I'm writing, you know, like right. They wanted somebody who's actually out doing stuff and, you know, contributing to the culture as well as sort of, you know, reporting on it. And so I was there for about 2.5 years, almost 3 years. And then, you know, the DJing stuff was taking up a lot more of my time. You know, I became friends with A-Trax and, you know, he had the idea of starting the label. You know, do you want to do this with me? He's like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And very quickly, you know, Fool's Gold went from sort of a little side project to something that, you know, really required a lot of time and energy to, you know, to put the TLC into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been around how many years?
We're going to celebrate the 4-year anniversary this fall.
That's amazing.
At CMJ.
That's not very long.
Yeah. Well, because we would always do the sort of quote-unquote birthday or anniversary party around CMJ because our first big show in New York was 2007. It was the Fool's Gold show at Hero, which was like our first label showcase.
Right.
And it was a big deal. It was, you know, Kid Sister, you know, Cool Kids, this, you know, then unknown dude, Kid Cudi, open up the show, you know.
Let's talk about Kid Cudi for a second. Because in my mind, I feel like that was the turning point from people who knew who you guys were to that track, the remix, getting big. And I remember...
Well, yeah, I mean, both versions of the song were huge in their own little... pockets, you know.
Right.
The craziest thing to me is as that song became successful, you know, with the dance remix by Crookers, it became such a model for literally everything that's on the radio now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, literally that song, when it came out, people were like, oh yeah, this is kind of weird. Then Europe got it immediately, and then it sort of like got re-imported back to America. Like, that was the first sort of like, you know, dance rap song.
Oh yeah,
to,
I mean,
to sort of change the face of radio in the States.
I think I remember that I was like on a work trip and I came back and I was in just like one of those black cabs and the driver was singing along to it on the radio.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? I mean, I knew it was big, but that's like, you know, some 45-year-old dude just like who knew all the words.
No, I mean, it's funny. It's like, you know, you think about the different ways in which, you know, as a label or just, you know, as a person that's into music, what are the different ways that you sort of gauge success? Like, is it, you know, a sort of glowing Pitchfork review or is it like a regular ass person humming your song?
I kind of think it's the latter, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like both are important, but it's like when you're making an impact on just, you know, sort of the fabric of people's lives, like, you know, Kid Cudi did that. You know, Duck Sauce, obviously, you know, Barbara Streisand is a jock jam now.
It's,
you know,
still,
like, that's, I mean, awesome.
Yeah.
Like, they play it, you know, at Knicks games.
That's got to be awesome. So hold on. So before we get to the phenomena that is Duck Sauce and Disco House, so Kid Cudi gets a single on your label that's huge. does that then just open the doors to more people who want to work with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, both the track record of what the labels accomplished, you know, not just with these sort of, you know, huge Billboard hits, but just also being really consistent over 4 years of putting out constant, you know, sort of interesting singles. Like, if we wanted to, we could have, you know, we could have been the, you know, guys rapping over techno music label. Like, we could have released, you know, 10 fake day and nights and probably have done well with it. But, you know, that's just not exciting creatively to A-Track and myself. You know, like, we are attracted to stuff that is kind of a little bit off the norm of whatever is kind of, you know, going on at the time.
Since you guys are so busy, he's on the road and you're on the road and working label, how do you find time to like, get new artists and then agree on new artists?
I mean, you know, it's just communicating. It's like, that's the easiest part of what we do. Like, finding music and sort of talking about music and saying, hey, I like this, do you also like this? Like that's great. I wish we could do that all day, but, you know, the reality is that, you know, when you run a label, it's, you know, the nuts and bolts side, like the stuff that is, you know, less glamorous than sort of, hey, let's, you know, brainstorm. Like, you know, because in a lot of ways, running a label is like fantasy baseball for music nerds. You know what I mean? Like, you find something that you like, and it's like, man, this would sound good if it had a remix by so-and-so. Yeah, that remix by so-and-so would be great. And it's like, you know, you reach out to the person, you know, get them to do it, and then you put the record out, and it's like, wow, we just dreamed this up, and now it's a real thing that exists.
No, it's totally. I mean, I think it's funny because if we go back to what Joel was saying about the creative process, it's just like, you just have this need to create and put something out there, whether it's a knife or a track or a remix, something like that. And then you're like, okay.
Yeah, we need to start Fool's Gold Knives. That would be fresh.
Dude, Chromeo Chrome Knives?
Yeah.
I didn't want to say it when he was here because I want to run it by you first on air, just without the knife guy here. But
I mean, just get Elliot down Food Gold to use those.
Yeah, well, no, it's funny that you bring that up because, you know, within the scope of all the Fool's Gold stuff that we do, you know, at the core of it, it's making music and releasing music. But what kind of makes it interesting and kind of builds a whole world around it is that we're just as interested in other things too. Like, you know, Elliot, you know, curates the Food Gold column for us. And it's like, obviously we're a record label, we make music, but on the website we can explore any, you know, weird little interests that we feel like. One of them happens to be the fact that our friend is a foodie and, you know, has a sense of humor, and you put those things together and here's Elliot interviewing, you know, a chef with Ninja Sonic, and they're making hamburgers.
Yeah, it was awesome. And or making baked goods with Justine D.
Of course. And it's just something that it's true to the spirit of what we do, and I feel like that's always going to be key. Like, whether we're putting out a record or whether we're putting out a t-shirt or whether we're putting out like a actual rubber duck sauce duck.
Yeah.
You know, what makes it interesting and what makes it cool is the fact that, you know, we're jumping into these projects with the same attitude that we took jumping into starting a label.
No, it's lifestyle, and people want to feel that they're part of something, and that's sort of what you guys are creating.
Before we have you play a set, what I just wanted to ask you, what is like the one thing that you find is just like on the grind you didn't expect, that a young aspiring music label person would be like, you don't think that you're gonna have to do this and it sucks, but this is like,
I mean, I could tell you a million of those things. I mean, you know, really, I get asked a lot, like, what's it like running a label, or like, what are the challenges in running a label? And, you know, I can kind of boil it down to two things, which is time management and ego management. Because the time management is obvious, you know, like there's 24 hours in a day, you can only do so much. And like, you have to be super organized at all times. You know, ego management, I think, is a little bit more of a gray area, because like, you have to, you know, as someone who is an artist that runs the label, whether it's me or A-Track, there's going to be things where you're like, man, you know, somebody else should be taking care of this. Like, I'm Nick Kestos. I DJ around the world. Like, I'm not mailing, you know, manila envelopes. And A-Track, you know, he's a you know, world-renowned platinum recording artist. It's like, man, I'm not looking at this fucking spreadsheet, you know? Like, and I think that, you know, for it to work, it's, you know, you either have to kind of, you know, figure out how to do those things yourself, or, you know, as all successful people do, you find a way to delegate. Like, you find a way to make a system around it. And it's like, you know, with the label, I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, we grew very quickly, and we also grew up in public. You know, it went from being Nick's Kitchen Records to having an office to, you know, now, like, you know, we just hired a guy to be our label manager, and, like, you know, we're just trying to make it more organized and just more efficient and just pro. Like, I feel like that should be something that you aspire to. Like, you can keep your ideals, you can keep, like, the creative spark, like, you can go about shit with the same attitude, but that doesn't mean that you can't be more professional. Like, I think, like, especially in sort of, I don't know.
No, you could say Williamsburg and hipster area.
In hipster culture 2K11, you know, like, it's there's it's sort of a dirty thing to say, like, oh yeah, you know, I'm trying to be more professional with my life.
No, you know
everybody wants to make things seem like it's a breeze, and oh man, I'm too cool to put effort into things.
No way. I mean I can speak
we
for
talk
us.
About
we work all. Hard.
Yeah.
I mean,
of
you
course.
Get up, you're up at like 8 o'clock in the morning doing emails, because and you were out late the night before, and you take meetings all day, and it's like it's a weird, I don't know why, laid back and like it just comes easy. Maybe it's a perception thing, but
I don't know, this whole like affected effortless type of thing, and it was like it's really hard.
It's not how these things work.
It's not how these things work.
You and A-Track just got me, like, let's put a label together, and just based on star power, you guys got all this, right? Just that easy.
Yeah, people think that you just, you know, go to sleep and the success fairy visits you.
Oh, that didn't happen to you?
Yeah, all right, she wears that Pabst Blue Ribbon tutu, right?
Yeah. All right, let's get, we're going to get about a 15-minute set from Nick.
And then we'll come back, we'll talk about Duck Sauce and Disco House and the future.
And Glee and the future Fool's Gold. And you are listening to Snacky Tunes, because that's what you are. And we're your host, Fingers. And actually, Justine D and Elliot Arno were both past guests on here, so you can go check them out on the podcast.
Oh, and I also want to send a big shout out to Reka, New York Magazine, Reset, Bullfrog and Baum, Good Company,
Jess Cantor,
everybody who helped out with the barbecue last week. We had like 300 people show up. It was Toronto.
Frankie Rose.
We got the next one. It's with Budokan and Flagrant Foul, June 15th. Tickets will be on sale soon. Take it away, Nick.
Fool's Gold.
touch.
Breaking the chain.
Man. Heaters.
Yeah, we saw our engineer bobbing his head in the back through the window. So Nick, we got Nick here from Fool's Gold Records.
Yo.
What's your official title there?
You know what? I feel like titles, it's kind of an outdated concept, bro. We're a modern day company, man. You know, it's like feelings and
Grand
such.
Grand Poobah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if it comes down to it, I would rather have like an ill decorative title, like Minister of Information or something.
That'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
I like it. So do you want to tell us what we just... You don't have to do it in order, but just selections.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that's cool is that, you know, with the music that we release, you know, you kind of build up a sort of family of artists. So it's like, whether it's a record that we put out or like a remix that somebody does for somebody else, I feel like it's still part of like the overall kind of Fool's Gold fireball that's, you know... traveling right. through the world. So what did I play? I played a new record that we're putting out by Kid Gloves called Music Power. I really like that one. I played a new Treasure Fingers remix for this artist, I believe, from Italy, Break One. Played Duck Sauce's remix for Chromeo, featuring LaRue. And then a new Congo Rock remix.
Nice.
So that's a lot of rave for your 15 minutes.
Yeah. So let's talk quickly about the phenomenon that is Duck Sauce, and about how essentially they relaunched a whole new genre of disco house, or they just really took it over the edge. It was sort of like percolating on the underground, and they really brought it to the forefront.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sort of like how how Daft Punk kind of, you know, not to make too bold a comparison, but it's sort of like, you know, when Daft Punk were coming out with stuff like Defunk and Around the World, like, you know, disco and house in general had been going on forever, but there really wasn't someone to kind of serve as like the like popular face of it. You know, like Daft Punk records, you know, a guy who likes rock music could listen to, or somebody that just likes regular pop music could listen to, or like, you know, a hip hop person could have that, and like, you know, it would be acceptable, you know, to have a Daft Punk record in the collection. And I feel like Duck Sauce, you know, maybe for a new generation of kids, you know, can be can have a similar role. I mean, you know, obviously A-Track is well known in the dance world now, but he's just as well known, you know, amongst, you know, hip hop fans, and, you know, continues to work with, you know, the Kanyes of the world. Like he's, you know, scratches on the Drake album and shit like that. So it's like, it's cool to have someone be a sort of connector between those scenes. And, you know, Armand is just, you know, he's one of a handful of people who can really be like a dance living legend. Like, you have to give it up for him. Like, he was the guy that really broke a lot of this stuff, and he's still going.
Right.
I mean, like,
just only if you got a palm tree in your city. Is that true?
You know what? I mean, I think that Armand's at a point where it's not like he needs to go out and DJ places. So, you know, he goes where he feels like it.
God.
You know, he's awesome.
He's awesome. No, I mean, I've seen him in New York.
Obviously his you know, musical you know, achievements are kind of without peer, but just like as a dude, like he's so much fun to hang out with. Like, you know, the cool thing about Duck Sauce is that it's just the two of them became friends and then decided to make music together. It wasn't like this calculated thing. Like, I'm, you know, from this new school of artists, and, you know, you're a legend. Like, let's, you know, some stuff and have it be successful. Like, literally, it's them fucking around. Like, it's them getting together at Armand's house and, you know, making each other laugh.
Yeah,
like,
no,
Barbra Streisand,
yeah,
it's a joke song. You know what I mean?
Like, no, I know. When I heard it, because... I was like, well, first off, it doesn't feel calculated.
And when I say it's a joke song, I don't mean to detract from it in any way. Like, it's just, it's not like, hey, let's make this to be funny. It's more like, hey, let's crack each other up.
It's no, like, you real know? Empathetic lyrics like Save the World.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a serious song, if you can consider any songs in the dance world serious. But yeah, it's Barbra Streisand on repeat.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
And what's funny is that, you know, that is a song that's on... commercial radio, top 40 radio.
Glee.
It's on Glee. It's, you know, in all these different, you know, television commercials and stuff like that. But essentially, it's an underground dance song. Like, it wasn't designed to be that. Like, it started as just this goofy thing that they could play in their sets. Like,
no, I remember hearing it at a Winter Music Conference, and everyone for their first show, and everyone been like, "What is this Like, this is this is awesome.
No, but it's one of those things where it's like, it just puts a smile on your face. The same way that, like, the, you know, whenever you hear a Daft Punk song, like, you just kind of, you know, you light up. Like, you think about the, you know, the dog walking around the city, and or you
the
think about, like,
dancing in
the
circle.
The Japanimation, you know, Star Trek dudes, you know,
55, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. So quickly, as we wind down on time, what's the most immediate future hold for Fool's Gold? Like, how do we come to your?
Well, the biggest thing that's kind of new for us is we're launching a store. We're launching a store right in Williamsburg. You know, our office has always been on Metropolitan, and you know, we have an office that's in a storefront. We never truly utilized the storefront aspect of it, but now, you know, that's all about to change. Next month, we open the doors to the Fool's Gold retail empire, you know, and the cool thing is we're just selling our own stuff. Like, we're selling all of the records, obviously, and t-shirts and stuff like that, but we have a whole batch of just awesome collaboration projects. Like, we have a headphone line that's coming out. We made these limited edition leather jackets with Members Only. We did, like, a whole line of laptop cases with this Italian company, Pajama. And so it's cool. It's like, you know, we're relaunching the online store too. So it's like, you know, if people can't get down to Brooklyn, they can still buy all this stuff. But, you know, the idea is that we want to have this cool little outpost to you know, to be like a physical manifestation of all the cool stuff that we're doing, you know, around the world and the internets.
Is one of your dudes going to have to be work cash register?
Yeah, you know, someone's got to. You know what I mean? But it's
that part of the ego management?
Yeah, you know, I don't foresee myself necessarily ringing the till, but, you know, I'm down to.
You'll be there to cut the ribbon, right?
Yeah, of course.
Awesome. All right, Nick. Well, thanks for joining us.
What's the website?
Yes. The website is foolsgoldrex.com. All the updates and news are up there. We're also foolsgoldrex on Twitter. And, you know, all the store details will be up soon. You know, in the meantime, just go check out what we're up to. We have a ton of mixes for download and just good vibes.
You guys are always really prolific in the amount of music that you put out.
And let's not, until this moment, slipped my mind, we're actually playing with one of your artists on Friday with Party Supplies at the Cake Shop.
Yes, Party Supplies is awesome. He's another new addition to the fam. You know, we started working with him. He is dope because, you know, he's not like a guy that's making dance music per se. Like, I feel like, you know, he comes from a hip-hop background. He approaches stuff almost like rock style songwriting, but, you know, with breakbeats and stuff. And it's cool. To me, it's like, you know, that kind of like Madchester, sort of like Happy Mondays, Stone Roses-y kind of sound. You know, he puts all these effects and stuff on his voice, and you know, again, you know, the people who we gravitate towards artistically are, you know, the people that are sort of the you know, standing away from whatever's necessarily, you know, in vogue at any given time. Like, you know, nobody is out there sounding like Party Supply, so it's, of course, we're gonna say, hey, you know, let's do a record.
Right. Well, you can see him play us along with us, Punches, this Friday at the Cake Shop. I think it's like $4. Starts around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
There will be Christmas lights on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we're going. I'm going to try and stage surf all the way front to back.
Do it.
Also, we're hosting a taco event on Wednesday.
Yeah.
What's the website for that?
It's for the Camarena Tequila, Familia Camarena Tequila. It's 250 Hudson Street. If you go to Camarena, New York, that's Camarena, New York, spelled out, .eventbrite.com. You can RSVP. It's going to be taco truck, Familia Camarena, tequila. God, I'm butchering that. I failed out of Spanish.
You failed out of Spanish. Anyway, we'll be off next week, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Continue on with our record series with Dean from True Panther. Should be great. We're your hosts, Finger on the Pulse. We'll be listening to Snacky Tunes, and Nick, take us out.
One, two, three, four. Click, 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 click. I know you hear me coming. 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 You know I'm coming when you hear that clicking. Ain't no quitting cause it ain't my sticking. If you know me, then you know I love a little booting. All booking, got you. Shookin', 100,000 on your wrist, no kidding. 100,000 on your chest, oh really? shit. Think I give a shit? Nah, don't be silly. So stalactite, flow to the ceiling. Keep doing what I'm doing, keep moving. I'm moving in the drop top, cruising down the strip. I ain't gotta talk, I can prove it. I'm a boss when I do it, cause the flaws like a motherfucker pimp. I'm pulling out knots while you pulling out lint. And I ain't no stopping, keep talking that shit. They call you who knows and they call me princess. You ain't that hot, put your jacket on, bitch. Love kisses. Never mind the haters, don't be mad. Me and my girls just got like that. Roll out of bed, then pop them tags. Me and my girls just got like that. Show it off, show it off, show it off like that. 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 Go visit, soap and listen. Say it ain't so, boy, your girl so gritty. Over a pity, do it on my titty. Girl on your dick, oh, oh. Wanna see this type of shit, so sickening. Pockets full of dough, got hundreds and fifties. You could ask P, you could ask Twisted. You could ask Yay, you could ask Twisted. See me on the air, brave food belly. Holler at your girl if you wanna grow with me. We could get some of that sticky, icky. We could go together like Minnie, Mickey. In it, out it, Lambo, Gini, Ferrari. Sorry, be there in the jiffy. Pedal to the metal, stiletto in the back. CZ repair them all, case I gotta scrap. Never mind the haters, don't be mad. Me and my girls just got like that. Roll out of bed, then pop them tags. Me and my girls just got like that. Well, show it off, show it off, show it off like that. Show it off, show it off like that. Show it off, show it off like that. Show it off, show it off like that.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This week, I came across a new website from the American Meat Institute and the American Meat Scientists Association. It's called www.meatmythcrushers.com. It is purports to be addressing consumer concerns about additives such as sodium nitrates in your, ham and turkey roll and whatever, and animal welfare and food safety. I noticed as I went through the Meat Myth Crushers website, however, that it did not address anything like subtherapeutic antibiotic use in the meat chain. So I'm not sure how many myths they intend to crush. But, you know, as I say, always say, it's good to know what the opposition is thinking. And if you want to be fair about any issues around the food scene, it's wise to keep up with their press as well as ours. That's it for Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Did you know we have a beer show? Check out a small clip from Beer Sessions Radio.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here with Ray Dieter from the DBA Boys.
Hey, Jim.
Ray, this is a fun show. We're drinking Belgian beer. We're drinking Ichtigum. Hanging out with the guys from 124 Rabbit Club. We got Don and Wendy from Van Berg and the Wolf. Well, let's go back a little bit to kind of build your pedigree. So the two of your top brands that we love and that you have now, Scaldis and Saison DuPont.
Yeah,
tell us how you met those guys, how you started working with them.
Well, Saison DuPont was really... that was.
If you want to hear more, head over to heritageradionetwork.com where new episodes of Beer Sessions are posted every week in our archive. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes.